This is CliffCentral.com. All right, how do you like that, huh? That's Alcoholic. That's what it's called by Frey. It's my buddy's new favorite song. All right. By the way, someone says here, terrible song choices by Gareth this morning. Ben, please do something. So Ben is going to take charge of that. Yeah, Stephen Pienaar is going to join us in a little bit. Very excited to talk to him. South African professional footballer. Listen to this. He's played for Ajax Cape Town. He's played for Ajax Amsterdam, Borussia Dortmund, Everton, Tottenham Hotspur, Sunderland, Bafana Bafana, and Everton Player of the Year 2009-10. He's just incredible. Primarily played as a winger, but also plays an attacking midfielder. And he's really done amazing things on the football field. Earned tons of cash doing it and deserves all of it. A permanent transfer was agreed in 2012. Listen to this. Everton paid Tottenham then a fee of £4.5 million for him at the time. The man is here in the studio with us this morning. How you doing, dude? Nice to see you, man. Grab a seat. Come and chill. Nice to see you. Oh, here he is. How are you, dude? What's that? What did you say? No, you don't need the headphones. Unless we take a call later on. Stephen Pienaar, how are you, man?
I'm fine, and you guys?
Yeah, you woke up extra early this morning to come and be with us. You don't like that, huh? You watched last night's match?
Yeah, I watched, but not really.
What did you think? The little bit that you saw.
Yeah, the first 5 minutes, I'll say. It was a bit of a walking pace for Barcelona.
Yeah.
You'd expect that coming off a long flight, but to get a goal so early.
Yeah.
I think that settled stuff quite quickly for them, so they could take the gas off the foot a bit. So.
How are you doing? What are you up to at the moment? Where have you been? Are you living permanently here? Are you in Cape Town? Where are you?
I'm between Johannesburg and Amsterdam.
And Amsterdam, all right.
Yeah, so most of the stuff that I do down here is just to get involved with the Stephen Pienaar community tournament.
Mm-hmm. How's that coming along?
It's going fine so far. We still it started last week with a junior, so it's going good. Looking forward to.
So
the
you
rest of the
you
month.
Get kids involved in football, and you kind of help them along.
What we do is we get from under nines. They play like a tournament for mm-hmm. four weeks with Puma and Standard Bank involved. So for us, it's just giving back and also a bit of social responsibility off the field, how to manage your kids. For them, it's important to know what's out there beyond football, life skills in general.
But are you also looking for talent? Because if you're going like under nines, you may pick up some real talent at that stage.
Yeah, that's actually our goal in the near future is to get a group of under 15s together and take them to different provinces, play. Hopefully, if things go well, we'll go to Holland and get them into a tournament over there. So
I mean, when did it all start for you? How did who picked up that you were so talented? I mean, how did you? Because you really are. I mean, some people just have it. I've often believed that some people just have this inherent ability to do something really well, and it's maybe it's God given or whatever. And no matter how much you practice, if you're not talented, you'll never be as good as the talented people. And of course, if the talented people let themselves go and they don't practice, then they also can deteriorate. But there is this huge gap between someone who's just good at something and someone who has to work at it every single day. There's always going
to
be that
I'll
gap.
Say you need to work at it. I was spotted at the age of 10 as well by Coach Kevin, Kevin Johnson.
Mm.
And he wasn't so sure about me at the time. Obviously, just playing. You're playing for fun as a kid. You just want to enjoy what you're doing. And for me, I think when he saw me, he basically told me, if you want to become someone or you want to become a professional footballer, you should have to be at it every day. So for me, the only way was to have a ball with me every second of the day and just work on stuff, trying to get better at stuff, trying to dribble better than other players. And as a kid, you just enjoy that. So and for me, I think he played a big part, and that advice stuck with me. And
I mean, Westbury, right? This is not an easy neighborhood to grow up in, and there obviously a lot of people who would be trying to find their way out of there, not because they hate the people there necessarily or because they're uncomfortable or don't love the place, but because there are better things for people who want to perhaps move on. And one of the ways out there is obviously if you've got some kind of real sports skill.
Yeah, it is. You know, coming from Westbury, like you say, the people are, it's a lovely neighborhood.
Sure. There's a lot of love, the families. There's, you know, people feel at home there, but it sometimes you want a little more.
Yeah, you want more. And for me, you know, like my mom always said, it's either you're going to put your head into the books, study, work hard at it, and make sure you make the most of it. And or you can become a boxer, because boxing was quite big when I grew up in Westbury. But nothing about football. So, and for me, I was just stuck with a ball all the time, before school, after school, before I went to bed. So, and that was for me, I think the only way out is to, if you put your mind onto something, is you stay focused, you know, there's no distraction at all. But obviously, my mom was there to tell me, listen, there is a distraction, is your books, sure. You have to study. But other than that, I think most of the kids, if you want to become someone, you need a distraction out of the way. And a lot of kids in Westbury, there's a lot of distraction. So that's why we started the tournament as well, is to show them, listen, is either you become a sportsman or you go to school. It's the only way, one way out of Westbury, and is by working hard and believe and stay away from all the other distraction stuff.
Yeah, and I suppose you have to have that focus, right? I mean, some of the best sports people, and not even just sports people, some of the world's most successful CEOs, these people are so focused. You think that that's an advantage you have?
I think the advantage I had was my mom being, you know, growing up with her. She was, I think, even now at my age, 36, I'm still like a little kid when I'm in front of her. She's always telling me what to do.
She's strict.
Even now, yeah. So yeah. I think that was for me, she was the main part, letting me know like what is wrong and what is right. And you know,
so is she a little bit impressed with what you've done with your life so far? I mean, is she kind of like, or does she still give you shit and say to you, hey, don't get ahead of yourself?
No, she still gives me a bit, you know. Obviously, she is proud. Obviously, not only me, my brother, my sister, they're all matriculated and they all got good jobs. So that's important. And she was, like I said, even now she's giving me a lot of stick if I, you know, do something wrong.
What does she have to criticize? I mean, I can't imagine.
No, it's just small things. Like, for example, I said to her, I want to sell my house. I want to move into another house. Said, why do you want to sell it? Stuff like that, you know.
All right.
She's quite bossy. Yeah,
managing your things.
No, but she's you know, the backbone in the family, so...
What is it like when you come from a neighborhood like Westbury and you end up in a Premier League team in England where these guys are earning, and you were earning decent money. I mean, this is, when I say decent, this is ridiculous compared to what an ordinary person earns. And you know, there are different kind of levels, and then there are transfers, and there are all these things that happen. And maybe it's not the number that we end up reading in the news, but it is an extraordinary life. I mean, my God, you see these footballers, they just live this life that the rest of us can't imagine.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't know all the hard work behind the scenes. For a footballer to, you know, they only see the glamour, the cars and all the other stuff. But
it's hard to see past that stuff.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, typical example, if you look at yesterday at Barcelona,
yeah,
you jump on a flight, travel 12 hours to come and play a game. That just shows the commitment they're putting in every day. You know, you have 7 days a week.
Where it's not like a holiday.
It's not. Yeah. You have to work. You work ridiculous hours. You're away from your family. And, you know, when you do get paid, I think it's good to say you need to spoil yourself, and like everyone does. But... you know, as a kid coming from Westbury, obviously, like every day I was just like pinching myself, you know, I'm playing in the Premier League.
Yeah, what kind of a life was it? Like, for example, when you were playing for Everton. So you would, what would you do Monday? Because obviously the weekend is, you know, especially on Fridays, Saturdays, you've got your games. But then there all the other nights, there are also things going on, right?
Yeah, mainly it's draining. You wake up, you 9 o'clock, you have to be in. If you're not on time, you get a fine.
So it's like a job.
It's a job.
You've got to clock in and all that stuff.
It's something you love doing. So you go in, you clock in, you work after training, you make sure you go home, you rest up to be ready for the next day. And for us, it was continuously every day, you know, and that's a bit of that I miss, because you get used to being in that routine for 17 years and all of a sudden it's gone, so you have to get used to that again. But it's a lot of like you say, Monday to Friday you focus. If you go to bed late the day before, you know, it can affect you the next day on training, and the coach might see, oh, He's not ready for the game.
And it's so competitive at that level that you have to be physically fit. You have to be rested, as you've just pointed out. You have to eat the right stuff. You have to train all the time. I mean, like, you have to be at the top of your game at any stage, because you will be replaced.
Yeah,
there are
definitely.
Other guys, there are younger guys who are trying to go
messy.
No, of course, but I mean, you know, there's the level to being a professional athlete like you are. That just means you cannot drop your guard.
No, you can't. It's like you said, it's competitive. You know, you go out on a field, you need to be on top of your game. You don't know, tomorrow there might be a 16-year-old waiting to replace you. So for every play, it was like, I remember when I was at Ajax, there was a rumor back then, Sande Olise was, when I was playing with Benny, when the first team was playing against the reserve team in a friendly game, you'll just smash the kids. Because said, listen, they're ready to take my job, so I need to be hard on them. So, you know, that's the way it is in at the top level. You have to be on your game every day. And to stay on top of your game, like you said, you need to eat well. You have to look after your body. You must have good people that supporting you every day. And that's important. If you don't have a good backroom staff, it's, you know, everything can go downwards. And we've seen it in the past with a lot of players.
How important is it to have good management, to have good representation? Because a lot of these guys could be taken advantage of. A lot of them could have their money stolen from under their eyes. You know, they're focused on performance.
Yeah.
So they might not be watching the investments. They might not be watching their PR and marketing being handled properly. You need good people.
You definitely do. I mean, a lot of players, you go out there, you just focus on playing, and you need people that will take care of your stuff away from the football, you know, the investment stuff, and you just need to perform. And if you worry about where your money is, you won't perform on the weekend. So, and for me, I was quite fortunate. I had a good team that was supporting me. With Rob Moore, being with me since I was 16 years old. So, you know, I just left everything else. I said, listen, and he said to me as well, the only thing you need to do is make sure you put a bullet in the gun so I can shoot. So that was basically him saying, you have to perform every day. And for me, it was important to, you know, not to worry about the other stuff. Just focus on your game. Make sure you're ready for the weekend.
But you also have a life. I mean, you know, and you can't live every single minute for that.
We have like the team buildings where, you know, after game, if the result goes your way, you go for a night out, you know.
Yeah, right.
You have to, I mean, we're all human beings, you need to let loose a bit.
So talk to me about this for a second, and you don't have to name names or go down and dirty here, but it must be impossible to turn away all the women who would have wanted to be with a footballer. This must be, you must have walked around, all of you guys, especially when you're all out as a team. You could go anywhere in England and people would know who you were. And there would be women, look, a lot of them are fat and ugly and you wouldn't have been interested. But there must have been beautiful women who were throwing themselves at footballers. Because in England, that's like better than being Prince Harry's wife, to be in with a footballer. What a lifestyle.
That's like for the girls out there in the UK, it's like a job. If you get a footballer, you know, you're going to be set, I don't know, for life, but...
And these women spend the whole time, like, buying outfits and looking pretty, and then they're getting into the Hello magazine and all this stuff. So for them, it's like a job audition if they meet you in a club or at a bar or whatever when you
guys
sell.
That's it. I mean, you know, and sometimes you get players that are weak if you don't have a strong... if you're not mentally strong, you fall into that trap. I've seen it with a lot of guys.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, you know, for me personally, I was always, you know, I'm this boy from Westbury. I've worked so hard to come where I am, and I'm not gonna just throw that all away by being stupid, you know.
Your mother was in the back of your head shouting
all the time, chip in my back. But I mean, it is, you know, like you say, sometimes you fall into that trap and it's quite bad. But I think
sometimes it's just fun as well. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to have consequences.
No, that's true. But
you got to live your life.
Now a lot of clubs are giving education to players.
How does that work? Do they put you in a room with a PowerPoint presentation and say to you, these are the kind of women you're going to look out for?
No.
They draw a picture of them, and they put up actual mug shots of dangerous women?
No, it's just, it's a normal stuff, how to be responsible, because you're basically representing a club, but it's a brand.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about someone like Tiger Woods. I mean, this guy was a supreme, he was the richest man in sport at one point. And he had a great life, and he was doing so well, and everyone on earth thought this was the most incredible guy. And he, even with all that brain, all that ability, all that coaching and mentoring and managing, and we make mistakes.
We're human beings, so sure. it happens. But sure, you know, it's life, and yeah, sometimes.
Who gives you these lectures, Charlie Sheen?
That would be a good one.
Who calls to sit there and give you a PowerPoint? It's Charlie Sheen saying, "All right, so here's what you got to do with the girl." Wow, what did you buy yourself the first time you got a really big paycheck? Not for your mom or anyone. What did you buy for you?
For myself, first big paycheck, I went out to, I was in Amsterdam at the time. I bought myself a Eminem CD.
Eminem CD, you're kidding me. You suddenly look at, so you checked in your, do you go into your bank account when you get there for the first time, you get this big paycheck, do you go in and look at the numbers?
No,
and you actually see your bank balance.
Was, you know,
you look at that bank balance and you go, good Lord, that looks good.
You think at school I was always the kid that wanted to become an accountant. So I was always, how to work with money. And when I got to my first paycheck at IX, besides buying my mom a house, I'd look at it and I was like, whew, I'm going to take 10 euros and buy myself a CD. So
that's unbelievable. That's
you
bought yourself a CD. You're so disciplined.
I'm not. All the time.
It's Amsterdam, so you can't buy a car because there's nowhere to drive it.
I could have bought myself a bike.
You could have bought a boat or a bike, but instead you're going to buy an Eminem CD.
Yeah, you know.
Was it worth it? Do you still like Eminem?
It was worth it. I mean, I was staying at a family at the time with a guest family, so I had a CD and I just it kept me going, you know, so I'm not homesick, listen to music all the time. And that was, it helped me a lot. So music plays a big part in, especially if you're from South Africa, you know.
Do you get to meet your heroes when you're also in this position? I mean, you're a hero to a lot of people, right? There are kids come up to you all the time and say,
you make me believe I
can do this.
When I walked in the dressing room the first time at Ajax, mm-hmm. Seeing Aaron Winter sitting there,
yes,
you know, these players that you watch when they were playing in the World Cup. So I was like, wow, I can't believe it. I'm Finidi George was there, Babangida was there as well. You know, guys that you watch on TV and you think, I'm actually sharing a dressing room with these guys. And you pinch yourself sometimes. For me, the biggest one was when Koeman got the job at Ajax at the time, and I was just looking at him, and he was talking to me. I didn't even listen. I was just looking at him, thinking, wow, he's actually coaching me now. I couldn't believe it.
Do you walk into these places, and are they all very nice to you, or do they kind of look at you a little suspiciously because they're not sure whether you might be a threat? I mean, what's the real feeling in the dressing room the first time you will meet?
Obviously, you know, it's a competitive place. We're all fighting for to play week in, week out.
So they're not super friendly, but
no,
they're not like.
To be fair, you get some guys that are there. They're a bit tough on you. That's maybe to get you. I know in Holland they were tough on us as kids to get into you, so you know what you're representing. You're playing for a massive club,
right?
But yeah, they're all super friendly. I know when you're in a dressing room, the kind of things that goes on in a dressing room, a lot of people would really want to know. But it's just
boring, right? I mean, it isn't boring. It's exciting.
It's I think it is exciting because you know the guys are just like I said, it's human beings. You go in, guy. Flipping his thing out in front of you in the shower and right. doing all kind of things. And
big dick showing everybody who's in charge, right?
That kind of thing. So, yeah, it's you know, a lot of banter in the dressing rooms.
So what about your Dutch? Can you speak decent Dutch? You ever learn some Hollands?
Yeah, I think my Dutch is better than my Afrikaans now.
Really? So you speak it regularly?
Yeah, every day with my kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are the kids? Tell me about that.
Being
a dad as well as being, you know, this famous footballer. What's it like you sharing those responsibilities?
I'm basically took the same way my mom brought me up and just being the same with them.
So you're strict?
Kind of a bit strict, but give them a lot of freedom. But, you know, it's girls, so I need to be a bit careful with them, so it's not boys.
You don't want to be the mean dad with girls. Do you let them get away with stuff that your mother would not have let you get away with?
Yeah, I do. Like, you know, sometimes they want some sweets at night where normally...
You give them an M&M CD then?
Nah.
So that's all you get. I'm just impressed because you also learned to speak some Zulu from, you say, Yizo Yizo.
Yeah, when I was at a school of excellence, you know, boys speaking Afrikaans and getting into a school where 90% of the guys speak different languages. So you have to, for you to fit in, you have to learn. And for me, it took me about 2 months and I was quite good, you know, sitting with the guys, just talking and learn a new language. So, yeah.
Well, I remember there was quite a lot. Now, this always happens, right, that you end up in relationships and then money becomes an issue sometimes because it was all over the press about how much, you know, your ex wanted from you and all that kind of thing. I mean, is this something that you also had people to help you deal with? Because some of the time it's just too much to think about, too much to worry about. And, you know, people take chances too.
Yeah, you know, you it's one of those where...
I mean, it's your goddamn money.
Yeah, but, you know, if... It's just... It was a difficult situation at the time.
It was all over the press. It must have been annoying for you and embarrassing in some way.
I got up...
Here's your business being discussed in the public.
Yeah, I got up. I was at the time, I was in the UK because, obviously, I had an issue... me seeing my daughter and sometimes I could, sometimes I couldn't, so I just wanted to, you know, to spend time with my daughter. That was for me, that was the most important part, you know,
right?
And then it became more people getting involved in the stuff from her side, so I just let it slide and I said, you know what, whatever, you can go to the press, you can say whatever you want about me.
Yeah,
I've got nothing to do because I know, and whoever was giving advice at the time knew what was going on, and I just said, listen, I'm a father, I'm gonna take responsibility of my child,
right?
That's all I can do. Further than that, there's nothing else I can say to the press. It's got nothing to do with me. If you feel like you've got a right to go to speak to whoever, that's your business. So,
but it doesn't make it easy for you or your daughter.
No, definitely. But you know, like I said, if you have good people behind you, like my mom was there, Rob was supporting me all the time, and he just said, you know what, leave it. It's, if you're gonna respond to all this nonsense, it's just gonna blow up, and just let it be. Tomorrow there's gonna be news about something else, and just let it slide. And that's what I did. And for me, the most important thing at the time was I don't want to get involved in chit-chatting with her side, it was my daughter. I'm still a father, so I don't need it.
How much access do you have to your daughter now?
You know, it's been okay. And to be fair, you know, there's always from the mom's side, there's always
there's gonna be issues.
You know, trying to talk bad about the dad because. Most
that's hard,
time.
Dude, because then she grows up and she's getting, like, bad vibes from the mom about you and And when she sees you, you're like, you're still her dad. I mean, that's really
like
tough.
I said, you know, the older she gets, the wiser she'll start understanding stuff, and I'll just let it be, and whatever they say about me, that's sure. their business. But I know the kind of person I am, the father that I want to be, and you know, as a son that grew up without his father, I don't want my kids to, you know, me avoiding them and stuff. So I just let it be, and I want to be a good father, and that's it. And make sure she, because I said to
this is your eldest. This is Skylar, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you got two other daughters.
I got two other daughters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but got a lot of responsibilities.
I think I need to get myself a gun.
But this is, yeah, well, listen, when those girls grow up and they start bringing boyfriends home, you got to look out. But I'm always interested in, like, with a long career like you've had, you really had a very good career in football, and you decided in March you were officially going to... Like,
no, it was actually playing a part for me around about October.
Oh, yeah?
It was playing in my head, but I wasn't so sure, you know. But, you know, in January, that's when I switched over, and I said, listen, I can't be waking up every day at 7 o'clock going in for training. And, you know...
Was that a hard decision to make?
Actually, you know, when you, like I said, when you wake up at 7 o'clock and you're stuck in traffic for an hour and you have to be there for... just before 8 to get to training every day, it was a nightmare getting into Bramfontein every morning.
And then, and then especially in cold winter mornings, you have to run around freezing.
It wasn't that, you know, I was just sitting in a car, and sometimes when I got to the training ground, my knee was hurting, and I think... Phew.
Just from being in the car, having to brake all the time in traffic, right?
That's the thing.
People don't understand. Footballers can even get injuries from having to sit in the car all the time. Can you imagine how ordinary people who do 9 to 5, it must be hell.
It's hard.
Because they're not getting the exercise on the pitch afterwards.
That's true. but for me, it was, you know, actually when we got relegated with Sunderland, I spoke to Rob. I said to him, he asked me, what's the next step?
So Rob's the manager, right?
Yeah, Rob Moore. And I had an offer to go to China. Mm-hmm. And then I sat down and I was thinking, listen, is this really what you want? Now you're going to move. You're already away from your one daughter. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to move away from the other two. Do you really need this?
To China, which is the opposite direction.
Obviously, there's a lot of money involved. But I just thought, that, you know what, my mom is not getting any younger, so I want to just move to South Africa and move with the family back to Johannesburg and see how things will work out. And to be fair, after the third game, my kids, they actually had it. They were like, nah, we can't go into Bidvest to the stadium every every home game. It's too cold for us. So,
yeah.
And then I was like, okay, you know what? I know you guys like going to the stadium. They enjoy.
How old are they now?
Five and eight.
Okay.
And Skylar's turning 10. So, yeah. And they were like, it's too cold. Especially when they came down, it was, you know, around about winter time. Yeah. So, but then, I don't know, the whole issue with my kids not getting visas.
This is a major problem. I mean, is our home affairs? What's going on there, dude?
That's what I couldn't understand.
If you can't even get this, can you imagine how irritated so many people are? Because you can't get visas for your kids.
Yeah, and that was, for me, it was a hard thing. And because as a South African, you think your kids automatically will get the South African passport. But there was a long process, and it took months. And then eventually the school wanted proof that... They're allowed to go to school. Yeah, so
they will not allow a kid to go to a South African school without a visa.
They did go to school, but they needed a paper. So for me to register them again in January, that was also it was a nightmare. So and the mom decided.
I'll tell you. You know why I like this story? I like this because ordinary people like us, we always think that we're the only ones who have to struggle.
No, we do.
And that famous footballers and people who are celebrities and people who are well known to the whole of South Africa. You also struggle.
Yeah, going into Home Affairs every second week.
Do people bother you in the queue the whole time? Must have caused a huge commotion. People saying, Stephen Pienaar's here, he's in the queue, go up and take a picture and get an autograph.
No, I was quite lucky. The guys that helped me at the time, they were helpful and make sure everything, I stand queue with everyone else and just try and get the paperwork done for me because it was important. My kids needed to go to school, and for them to not going to school, it's something.
Sitting at home.
So yeah,
you need them to be educated.
Yeah. So yeah, and we decided it's better to go back to move back to Holland. So yeah. It's unfortunate.
What kind of place do you live in Holland? What's the house like?
It's a nice neighborhood, Eiberg. It's quite newly. It's about 15 years old, the community, just outside of Amsterdam.
Nice neighbors?
Not really.
Already,
some of them are not. Some of them not so kind because obviously it's a lot of old people staying in the block. I've got seven neighbors and they're all old, and I see this young boy walking in and staying in a building next to them. It's a nice, Amsterdam. You don't need a big house. Your apartment is good.
Yeah, sure. And also space is at a premium. It's really expensive.
Yeah,
property,
and yeah. You need to be. It's quite central as well. So for me to get into town, I can jump on the tram anytime I want. So it's.
Well, now that you don't have to wake up every morning for the early morning training sessions.
I still do wake up, though, in the morning to go to gym, but not at 7.
But you don't break that habit. I mean, it's still part of the way
you... it's part of my life, I go out and tell myself I need, even if I haven't kicked a ball since November, but I go in the gym.
Keep fit.
Yeah, to keep fit. So it's important, stay healthy. You have to be an example to kids because I go around a lot of schools to try and explain to kids you have to be active in school.
Right.
Because obviously we know health issues, it's important. So you don't want to walk in with a beer belly and a kid seeing you and like he's talking about all this and you all coming in. Yeah.
Like so many other former footballers, right?
No, but I'm just saying.
No, there are. There are a lot of them. We see them commentating sometimes, fat slobs.
No, but it's important, I mean, if you're going to motivate kids about eating healthy, you need to look. You need to look a part. So, for me, it's important.
Have you made enough money in your football career to not have to work anymore?
I can't say that. I still need to work. I mean, there's people that I take care of. I've got my mom. I've got my three kids that I still take care of.
But you, I mean, like you could, you would work because you want to, not because you have to.
No, I have to work. I mean, everybody have to work.
I thought you had so much cash packed away, you didn't have to work anymore.
The Queen of England is still at work. So, I mean,
that's a good point. I suppose everybody has to work.
You've
got to have a purpose.
Exactly. I mean, and for me,
and you're young. So, I mean,
I'm 36.
36.
You don't want to be, when you reach 40 or 50, selling your houses and your cars. No. I mean, so
we've heard those stories before, right?
You need to stay on top of things. Just make sure you, as long as you get a little bit of source of income,
you'll have to give up that M&M CD eventually.
it's still in the box, though.
You still have it. Wow.
And that's a Tupac one, so yeah, it's...
Dude, what about the next kind of step for you in terms of, I mean, you've got this foundation that you're running where you, work with the young kids and kind of get them active and get them inspired about sport and maybe help them out in tough neighborhoods and all the rest of it. But that's probably one of the many things that you could do now because you do have a lot of reputation. There's value, there's brand association, there's stuff you could do for brands. I'm sure that there's plenty of offers still pouring in, and not necessarily for you to just play.
No, I mean, obviously, representing Everton is also...
That's like a lifelong thing, right? It doesn't stop.
I hope so. No, but I mean, working for the club, when they called me and said, you want to get involved again working for the club, and for me, it was one of those where you can't say no, and I mean, for me, it's a big part of my life. My kids... now supporting Everton as well. So
yeah, they didn't have obviously, a choice. You know, don't pretend you didn't give them a choice.
No, if you're born in Liverpool, you have to support Everton. There's no way out. But I mean, you know, representing the club, and also, I'm starting actually end of May with my coaching badges. I'm going back to the UK.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, you don't want to start coaching kids and you don't even have qualifications. So
no,
I need to do it. So
plus they're losing coaches left, right, and center at the moment.
So hopefully there might be a job coming up soon. Oh. But that's also one of the things that I want to do, and yeah, see where it will take me. You know, I still think I've got enough to offer in the game, especially back here home.
Yeah.
With young kids, development and stuff like that.
And so. South Africa is very proud of you, so you must have a lot of love here when you're around people.
Definitely, the people, you know, from day one since I started putting on the national team jersey. I know there's been a lot of mixed feelings, but, you know, wherever I go, the people, they've always been helpful. They've been kind to me. And, yeah, you know, it's really nice, you know, coming back home and you get so much love. And I've got only the respect for that.
So your mom's here. Your daughters are in Holland. The other daughter's in England.
No, the other one is, yeah.
She here?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So
Skylar's, she's South African.
Okay, so you're really between South Africa and Holland most of the time.
Yeah, mainly if I go back to Holland is obviously because I have to go do work for Everton in Liverpool. So obviously I first hop off in Amsterdam, spend some days
there. And Amsterdam's nice and central and you can get everywhere you need to go.
Exactly, and it's a lovely city.
It is, huh? It's a fun place. Like people there, I was there last year and I just got the feeling like people there are just so happy.
It is a happy place. I mean, it's there's a lot of cultures there in Amsterdam. It's, you know, and people, like you said, are so friendly. And for me, it's a nice city.
Who are the best people in terms of football, names that we would recognize? Who are these people who are still your friends? You talk to each other often, because we imagine ordinary people like us, we think all you footballers all know each other and you're all big friends, but that's not true. There are a couple though that mean,
yeah, you know, when you as soon as you leave a club, you start losing a bit of contact with the players. But I've always had a group of guys. Nigel de Jong, we've always been close since the days of Ajax. He's one of his daughters, same day, born the same day as me. So we speak. Ryan Babel, obviously played for Liverpool, but we were always fighting. But you know, our kids are friends. So
so now you had to be friends.
Yeah, nah. Obviously, his son supports Liverpool, but there's a Baines. Ayek Beni Yakubu from Nigeria. I think he's the guy that every second day we're on the phone talk about life in general. Good. He's also retired.
And assholes. Like, who are the people who you hope you never see again?
There's a few.
I'm sure.
Phil Neville, definitely not.
Don't need to see Phil Neville ever again.
I'm joking. He's one of those guys when you're hockey in a room, you just don't want to hear his voice.
No.
I mean, he's it's like a chippy guy all the time.
Made
but
a lot
nice,
of noise.
Yeah, a noisy
was
guy.
Was he the guy who was swinging his dick around in the dressing room?
No, it wasn't him. I said it was Yakubu. No, but...
Yeah, all right. Okay.
No, but I still, with most of the guys, we're all friends. Social media nowadays, you can
hit them up on like Instagram or
send a message
or Twitter or WhatsApp or whatever. Yeah.
The other day, one of the guys that I played with at Ajax Cape Town from Brazil, there was 1999. He sent me a message and we start talking again.
Was your response, "Who the fuck is this"?
No, I looked at his picture and start asking.
So you
questions.
Knew straight away.
Yeah, straight away. You know, I mean,
that's cool. Do you stay in contact with a lot of these guys?
Yeah,
nice.
With most of them.
Do you miss already? It's only been a few months, but do you miss that feeling of being in a team and having that routine? Is it hard to get over that, or are you happy you moved on?
I'm happy I moved on, because at one stage, you know, I knew it was going to happen, and you have to prepare yourself mentally for that moment to come. But I do miss the dressing room. That's one thing that I'll miss. Going out playing, I can join a Sunday league team. It's not a big deal. But I mean, just the in the dressing room, you know, the jokes, the stuff that's going on in the dressing room. That's what I'll miss the most.
And that feeling of like being with a bunch of guys and you all there together and you're there to
every
win.
Every day we spend more time with each other than with our families.
This is in our genes, though, as men, right? Because we used to go hunting together, and this is what we did.
Yeah, that's, and you know, that's the only part that I'll miss. But I don't miss going out and a coach tell me what to do. No. That's one thing for sure I don't miss.
For sure. Having to schlep to and from the stadium every day, right? No one wants to do that. What was the most irritating part of being... Because a lot of... I meet young people all the time who have these dreams that they want to be this and they want to be that. And a lot of people obviously want to be famous footballers with a great career like you've had. It's not easy to get there. But what's the part of it that you... that people don't understand, that's really shitty, like the thing that made it very tough for you, that on those bad days you didn't want to handle?
Obviously, if you lose a big game, you go out for a meal with your family, and you get people shouting abusive stuff to you. You know, it's,
they call you useless and
yeah, but
a piece of shit.
I've had a lot more worse than that, but I mean...
Worse?
Yeah.
What's the worst thing anyone's ever said to you after a game? Was this at Everton?
No, it was Everton, when we played in a cup game away. It was against, I think it was Kyle Isle at the time.
Yeah.
And one of my teammates, Aruna Kuna, scored, so we ran over as players, and... me and him standing there and giving a hug, and obviously he just came back from a long-term injury, so I was quite happy for him. And then in the crowd and the people shouting like, "You monkeys, go back to the jungle," and stuff like that. For
like
me,
racial abuse, huh?
Yeah, it was that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, then you think, phew.
Apparently that's worse in Spain than almost
anywhere. Yeah, but there's places that that we've had, and where you hear them making the sounds all the time.
Jesus.
And to be fair, I actually halftime I went in the dressing room and I said to the coach, you know, I'm not going back out there again. And I walked back. He said to me, "You just have to go back out." And I walked back out. I started pretending like I got cramps in my stomach, and I walked back in. And I just went off.
Yeah, because that's you don't need to put up with that.
Yeah,
shit.
It was getting too much, and you know, sometimes
some guy who sells pies is busy shouting at you, calling you names.
No, but it's, you know,
some guy who burrows around in the ground every day for food.
But it's stuff that you think, you know, stuff like that, especially. When you're out with your family, having a meal, and people coming over, interrupting your time with your family, sometimes you think, if I was just a normal guy, will people just walk over while you got your spoon in your mouth and asking?
And they're
questions?
Taking pictures of you the whole time.
That was some of the stuff that I think it was a bit nice.
Stephen, what about the highs? Because those highs must be incredible. Like when you've just scored. Or when you guys have won a match that you really didn't expect to win, that must feel amazing.
Yeah, obviously, you know, as a player, even when you win big games, I mean, going back, obviously, I remember when we played Feyenoord at Ajax Amsterdam. We play away. We'll come in for the game. They'll throw bottles at a bus. We play without supporters, but then we always end up winning. So when we were going back to Amsterdam, you know, when we come back into the city, and the supporters sometimes I'll go out in the city and start eating for free, you know, stuff like that. And that was the nice part about it.
For a while there, you're like a superhuman. You're like a god, right?
Yeah, especially when you play against, you know, your... big clubs. I mean, when you win, you go back. You get stuff offered to you for free, and then sometimes that was nice. You know, and then you think,
This is cool.
It's a bit too much, but it is nice. You accept it, obviously. But then,
What's the best gift you've ever been given by a fan, or you know, been treated to by the club, or whatever it was?
The best gift is.
Tell me an M&M CD.
Nah, when one of the kids at a school in Liverpool made a whole sort of a booklet about me, and
oh, wow.
I was just dropping off my daughter at school, and this little kid came over to me and gave it to me, and I was like, wow.
That's,
you know,
beautiful.
And it was touching to see, you know.
I was expecting you to say a watch or a car, but I wish I could. You're telling me this little kid made a book.
It was because the stuff that was in the booklet was touching to me. And
that's beautiful.
And it was really nice. It was a good gift for me.
Listen, dude, I'm just so impressed with your career, your life, your take on all of these things. It must be incredible to look back now on this fantastic football career and just, you know, soak it all in, like take stock of your life. You must feel good.
Yeah, you know, like I said, in March when I was, you know, preparing myself to announce that I'm going to retire, those months I was just thinking and I looked back on my career, the, like you say, the ups, the downs, and yeah, it really sunk in. Like, I was quite pleased with what I've achieved for a kid from Westbury, you know, and walking out when you hear the Champions League anthem playing, for me, you know, that kind of things, walking out in front of 80,000 South Africans at FNB for the World Cup, you know, it's moments like that I'll never forget in my life, and I can only share them with other kids that one day also want to play in the World Cup or play in the Champions League or run out and score against Manchester United at Old Trafford. You know, it's that kind of memories that will stay with me forever. And I had a good look at it, and you know, just to reminisce on it in March, February, and I told myself, I think it's a good time now to call it a day.
Yeah, you quit before they kind of get tired of you.
Yeah, actually they were tired of me because I think at Wits the guys were tired of me moaning every day about waking up early, so well, I'm sure they were quite happy to see me.
You know, we're all very proud of you here in South Africa, and I'm sure that your family are thrilled with what you've done. And listen, you're 36, look at all this time you still got. You can do anything you want.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Become president.
You can become president. You could coach. I mean, didn't there are a couple of coaching positions that just opened up? Come on, you know, have some fun.
Yeah, no.
You can order these guys around. Now you can be the one who phones them and says, "Why aren't you here for practice at 7 o'clock in the morning?" It's a pleasure to see you, man.
Nah, thanks, Garrett.
And really, very, very good to sit and talk, and you know, just talk. You don't have to worry now. You're like you're Stephen Pienaar. You don't belong to any club. Because it almost feels
I still belong to Everton now.
Yes,
I mean.
But you know what I'm talking about. You don't have to wake up and go and report for duty every day.
Nah, but it's, yeah, like you say, I'm just going to enjoy it for now. You know.
Don't let anyone take your money, all right?
Nah, definitely not.
Keep those greedy goddamned hands off your money, if you don't mind.
No, only my mom can take it.
Yes, exactly. Well, she's allowed to do whatever she wants. Your mother's, she's in charge.
Nah, she definitely is.
Stephen Pienaar, everybody. What a great guy. Great to talk to you this morning. And all the best. Keep in touch with us. Let's know what you're up to.
No, definitely will. Thanks.
All right, bro. Thanks, nice to see you, man. Very good. There we go. This is CliffCentral.com.